And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Very excited. So you are here with me, Bridget Riedel. Dean Wysocki's gone. He says he's on vacation. I'm sure it's a golf course somewhere in sunny South Dakota. And overall, I get the pleasure of not only having a guest in studio today, but I also have a guest host today, and she's going to be joining me from Hillsboro, North Dakota. Hopefully we have everything up and running for her in just a moment. All right. So Sarah Lovis, who has been a guest with me before, but now Sarah, you get to help host. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you today, Bridget?
Fabulous. Thanks. How's things in Hillsboro? Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful day up here. I would imagine that there are one of a couple of things going on. First of all, there has been a lot of fertilizer application going on this week. The wind came up yesterday, and so that dried some things out, and I think there was some fertilizer going on, so I think we might have some of that, but if not, it is the annual North Dakota holiday of deer opener. And so I imagine there's a lot of orange out in the countryside right now, too.
Well, there is. We're an hour and 8 minutes into it, if I'm not mistaken. So things are off and running, right? We're ready to go for the day. You and I did not worry about our deer hunting today. Instead, you said fertilizer going out. Could you introduce, for those who don't know, why that's near and dear to your heart?
Well, thank you for that, Bridget. And of course I will. Yes. So I work for a company called GK Technology. It is a precision agriculture company. We are actually a pioneering company in the world of precision agriculture. And so this time of the year, I take a lot of soil sample results, and I turn those soil sample results along with the zone maps that we have created and make variable rate applications. So a lot of times when you see those fertilizer spreaders out in the field and they're driving down the field, they are not applying the same rate as they go across the field. They're going to put the right amount of fertilizer in the right place. Greater amounts where we have greater yield potential and lesser amounts where we have lesser yield potential. So we're trying to be efficient with our inputs, and we are also trying to be environmentally friendly at the same time.
So quick question, you know, it's been so dry, not wet like we normally see some falls. Do you see folks backing off on the amount of fertilizer applications that they're doing this year because it's dry, whether that has to do with price of fertilizer, equipment when we're burning up shanks on cultivators, et cetera, or the potential for wildfire sparks?
Yes, in some of all of the above, I think that you just said. So first of all, one of the things that really drives the decisions around fertilizer for a lot of these farmers is soil sample results. And the soil sampling in some places has been kind of a struggle, especially out in northwest North Dakota. The fires out there have been really tough. There's been no off-road travel. And so it kind of took until we got this last minute rain that really helped them get going. And then, of course, the fertilizer prices is definitely playing into farmers' decisions right now. I think the phosphate market in particular is pretty high. And so I think that's kind of an issue in some places. The other thing that I don't think people have thought about, even though it's really dry right now, a lot of places in North Dakota were pretty wet earlier this spring.
They really were.
And that caused a lot of issues with leaching of nitrogen and those sorts of things. And so I've actually had some conversations with farmers that want to hold off a little bit because they don't want to have to deal with nitrogen loss due to really wet conditions. So it's kind of thinking about how wet it was last spring, and now here we are, and it's really dry, and in some places, some people are pretty worried about that. And then, of course, I've had a lot of conversations with some people about how hard the ground is as well.
Yeah.
So in some places, like you were saying, getting those shanks through and actually getting the soil probes to go in the ground is can be an issue.
So in regards to what you mentioned earlier about whether it's nitrogen, phosphate, et cetera, we've been asked a bunch about the Mississippi River levels being low and how that affects barge traffic. With the customers that you talk to, because you do the mapping, you don't supply fertilizer, but for those who are worried about supply, I think it's already here and it's in the shed, so to speak, for what needs to be done this fall. So that shouldn't be a worry. But do you hear some rumblings within your industry, those saying, I'm a little concerned I'm going to be able to get all of my product in time for spring due to where we sit now with low Mississippi River levels?
I have not heard that yet because I don't think I've talked with enough wholesalers on the fertilizer side. What about you, Bridget? What have you been hearing about that?
You know,
now I feel like we're just sitting down and having a good old chat like we usually do.
Yeah, but there's not like a plate of nachos in front of us. Right now, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about that. One of those reasons might be due to price. We just came off of a fairly good bushels in most places. There are certainly pockets that were not nearly as good. And like you mentioned, some of those areas that were so heavily wet saw less bushels than where we saw some dry conditions. And there's some planning for next year, but not everybody wants to run out and spend money on fertilizer right now. I think they're also hoping for a slight drop in the market over the next few months. We'll see what that does.
That sure is what it feels like to me and the conversations that I've been having, and I've been trying to figure out how to get those fertilizer rates maybe a little bit lower than what we've been doing in the past. And I've seen a couple less fertilizer passes as well. So it's an adventure. Who would have thought that this fall we'd be concerned about drought going into next year, especially after certain places in North Dakota couldn't get stuff planted earlier this year. I mean, goodness gracious, it was about halfway through June, I think, before some of those farmers in North Dakota had good working opportunities to get crop in the ground.
And that's cropland. If you think about pasture, cattle were belly deep in grass because we did have great rainfall. You know, Mother Nature has that tendency to go ahead and fix it. So even though she was dry over the winter months last year, we didn't have a lot of rainfall, or excuse me, a lot of heavy moisture snow. We did have a lot of rainfall once we got to the time we would normally be planting. Maybe that's the case again for 2025. Probably too soon to tell.
That I would agree. I will say this, in the little bit of soil sampling that I have done this fall, especially right out here by Hillsboro, which now is a couple of weeks ago, a month ago or something like that, I would say that the moisture 2 feet down is better right now than what it was in the fall of 2020. So, and in the fall of 2021. So if you remember those falls, it was pretty dry. And I can remember soil sampling in those falls, and especially the fall of 2021, it was really hard to get the core to stay in the soil sample probe because it was so dry. The sampling conditions are a little bit better. A little bit better moisture. We're certainly not flush. It's something we're going to have to watch into next year.
Well, here's one way to pay attention to that. And Dean would never forgive me if I don't put in a plug for the fact that on Wednesday, November 27th, will be our weather special here on WDAY. And you can join us starting with our show at 1 o'clock, Weather and Ag in Focus, and we'll carry over into the Jay Thomas show starting at 2 o'clock. And that will be the six-month calendar of what we're going to be seeing for weather throughout the winter months. When can we anticipate big storms? We won't know what they contain for moisture, but at least we'll know a pattern as to when we could be seeing some storms. It doesn't always follow my travel calendar, but unfortunately, it's too close for comfort some days.
Well, and I am really glad to hear that that show is coming up, because that is one that I wait and watch for. It's actually pretty that I enjoy listening to when the LRC is how it's forecasting things out. So that's pretty good.
Well, when we're thinking about planting intentions, what we might be seeing, there's just times folks want to know if they're going to travel. Maybe they're planning a wedding. But above all, in farming, it can help us as we're thinking ahead about some of our seed purchases. If we're going to be looking at a heavy fungicide type of year, which, ooh, by the way, you and I'll need to talk about this a little bit later. Tar spot has been confirmed in North Dakota. And because
off the meta.
Yep.
That's a big one.
Found it down in Richland County this year, and there's eight other counties under watch. So we're going to talk about that and what the spread of it is going to look like. But before we do, we have a guest today. So I have Sarah to talk about all my cropping systems with. And then we have our guest, Travis Maddock from Maddock, North Dakota, to talk about livestock today. So when we return, we're going to have some time with Travis, not only someone who is producing beef, also has a feed operation and a farm supply store, has done work with National Cattlemen's as well as at the Cattlemen's at a state level. we have a lot of areas that we can talk about. Oh, and then there's this big FFA event going on tomorrow that I think pretty much all three of us are going to be attending. So we'll be able to give you the details about that as well. So looking forward to so much today. Stick with us. If you're out waiting in a deer stand, keep an eye out for that big 30-point buck. Maybe it'll come right by. We'll be right back. Oh, so I am in studio today, but I have a co-host who is joining me remotely, and that's Sarah Lovis. And she's with GK Technology out of Hillsboro, North Dakota. But then also I have a guest here with me today, and that is Travis Maddock. Travis is with the he's from Maddock Ranch, Maddock Farm Supply, or Ranch Supply. We got a lot of things that we get to talk about with all of you today. So again, like I said, I have cropping systems with Sarah. I have beef with Travis. Travis, go ahead and introduce yourself.
How do I introduce myself? I'm telling you right now, I'm very nervous because when I walked in this morning, or just this afternoon, there's a magazine down at the entry and a big picture of Bridget. And then I turn the page and there's a picture of Sarah. And I'm thinking, I am in esteemed air here, rarefied air with the hosts of this program. And I just don't think I can probably keep up, to be honest.
I think you'll be okay. Yeah, that was the Future Farmer magazine from Spotlight Media recently did an article on women and ag, and Sarah and I got to be a part of that.
So yeah, I'm from Maddock. We have a farming and ranching operation there. We also have a direct-to-consumer beef operation. And about a year ago, against my better judgment, we purchased the old Louts Feed and Supply store, and we've rebranded it Maddock Ranch Supply. And we sell feed and fencing, animal health, equipment, things like that. So, it keeps us busy. Family operation, I'm fourth generation on our farm, although it's gone through a number of different iterations with, you know, brothers and aunts and uncles taking, you know, moving around and things like that. We're not on the original farmstead. That'd be my Uncle Greg and Aunt Marla lived there. My dad and mom moved in the early 80s up to the farm where we're at now. So, yeah.
So was it always the plan for young Travis in his mind that he was going back home to the ranch?
No. It was never. I think young Travis didn't have a clue what he was going to do. I think old Travis still doesn't really have a clue where he's going most of the time. Young Travis went to school and thought he was going to be a vet, and then he realized he didn't like to get good grades. And so then young Travis said, I'll go be a school teacher because, you know, if you can't do it, you teach it. That's the old axiom there. And so I taught high school ag for a few years, and then I realized I liked science and discovery, and I actually liked problem solving. And that's when I went back to school and did some graduate work. And it's been quite a journey over the past 25 years, but I've got to experience an awful lot and meet a lot of great people. And yeah, so.
Okay. So with that graduate work, some folks would say, well, if you're raising cattle, you don't need all that education. But I have a feeling that some of those things and experiences have come in super handy.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm a quasi meat scientist / ruminant nutritionist. I guess they say I'm classically trained as a ruminant nutritionist, but I spent most of my time in the cooler at Dakota City, getting rib samples and meat samples and looking at, you know, quality effects or quality factors in beef cattle for the most part. I'm truly a meathead. If you really want to know what I like, I like the consumer side of things. I'm always intrigued by why does a consumer walk by the meat case at the supermarket and they stop at the red meat side of things when that chuck roast is $6 a pound or $7 a pound when, you know, right next door there's a chicken breast that's cheaper or a pork loin that's a little cheaper. What causes that in the consumer? Why is, you know, is it palatability? Is it a value proposition? Why do they, those types of things intrigue me and always have. And that's been most of my, when I was an academic, that was the bulk of my research was in that area. So, but then, now I'm a farmer. So
how does all of that, go ahead, Sarah, I'll let you go first.
Well, I was going to ask, what exactly were your degrees in? I know you referenced going being a vet, but what exactly were your undergrad and graduate degrees?
So, in undergrad, I had a dual degree in animal science and ag ed, and then I went and taught ag, and I was a really good FFA advisor. I was a really bad ag ed teacher. I liked judging and stuff like that, but the day-to-day grind of doing lesson plans was less than optimal for me. And so then I went to Texas A&M and I did my master's in meat science. And following that, I came back to NDSU and I did my doctorate in ruminant nutrition. So, yeah.
So with all of the background in meat science, and you're now taking what you guys raise on the ranch, your beef, mm-hmm. and selling to the consumer,
yeah.
what are some of the things, the trends and so forth that you see that you make sure that you capitalize on when you're talking to your customers to bring them that quality beef?
You know, what we're trying to do is it's mostly about, you obviously got to have a quality product, but it's about story. It's about, you know, finding the consumer that wants to connect with where their food comes from. And I know that's a little cliche in this day and age, but that's what we try to do. We try to connect with our customers and say, hey, you know what? We're a family operation. We try to do things right. We try to take care of our animals the best way we can. We try to take care of our land. You know, we're very, once again, regenerative is becoming more of a cliche than it should be, but we've always been holistically managing our land. I mean, we rotationally graze, we rest pastures. You were talking about the drought last year and coming into this year and the rains we had. We were able to rest about half our ranch this year where we didn't even have any cattle. That's really going to set us up in the future. And that's the story we try to tell our consumers, our customers, you know, and they like that connection. They like the fact, and they like, we're a big family. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and we truly are a family operation, everything we do. So, you know, that led us to, in 2020 then, we invested in the 6-in-1 meat plant in New Salem. So we're part owners of our own harvest and processing facility as well. So you truly do get you want to, once again, farm to fork or however you want to say it. We control it all the way through. And not only do we get to control everything, we get to, you know, what type of products are we going to make out of any type or whatever our customer is looking for. We can be very targeted in that, but you know, we truly have control over the whole process, all the way from raising the animal through, you know, and now we've got the retail store in Harvey, where we do have a freezer there, and we sell most of our retail products to the store in Harvey, so along with direct to consumer quarters and halves and things like that.
So can I ask a question, Bridget?
Of course.
All right. So there, Travis, it sounds like you've got you and your family have a lot going on there. You know, I'm hearing a processing facility, you know, harvesting and processing facility, your feed store. You obviously need to operate the ranch. Yeah. You've got a retail outlet in Harvey. So you obviously have a lot of family members working together to make all of that go. So who is all involved with your family making things run on a day-to-day basis, and how does that all work?
You know, I've got a big family, and I've got the best family. My mom and dad did a wonderful job raising everybody. I've got five brothers and sisters. There's six of us. I am the oldest, which doesn't necessarily make me the wisest. It just makes me the oldest. you know, my brother Rob and sister Casey, they're both meat scientists, kind of as well, and have been on faculty at NDSU. I've worked with both of those and some of my other. I also have a consulting business that we do a lot of food safety, and we work with small meat processors and stuff. And so we've been able to use their expertise in those endeavors. My brother Justin is back on the farm. Now we split the ranch. So Justin has six kids as well. And Justin and his wife Rachel, and they've got a wonderful family. And he said, you know what, just for my legacy, I think I'd like to have my own deal. So we took the ranch and we split it up a little bit, and they have their operation called Angle M, which was the traditional name of our farm was Angle M Cattle. And Justin and Rachel have that. Shane, my youngest brother Shane, and myself, then we partnered up and took a portion of things and are kind of building our own deal. That's called Maddock Ranch then. So we rebranded it as Maddock Ranch. And even my sister Callie, who and her husband Drew, they live up north of Towner. We had some of their cattle on our ranch this summer. It's really a lot of synergies within the family. We all work together. We all love each other a lot. We talk all the time. I've got texts from every one of them today and visited with half of them. And so we've got a great family. So, but as far as Maddock Ranch, it's myself and my wife, Misty, and our two children, James and Lauren. They're both in high school. And then my brother Shane and his wife, Lindsay, and they have four children. They have Aubrey, Emery, Luke and Hattie, and they're much younger. Shane's the youngest. I'm the oldest. But he and I are just fantastic friends, and we're great in business together. His strengths and my strengths meld very nicely. So
we have so many more questions for you, Travis.
I'm sure.
We're going to come back from bottom of the hour news. I'm sure you're going to be able to solve this, so we never have to question it again. grass-fed or corn-fed
okay.
beef. We'll want to make sure to ask about that. And I think there's so much more when it comes to the processing.
And what was the hay crop like?
Yeah.
What was the hay crop like this year?
We're going to need to know about that. Those voices that are joining me today are Sarah Lovis. She is in with me as a co-host today as Dean Wysocki is gone. And then also we have our guest today, Travis Maddock. For those of you who want to make sure you're following along, not only just listening on the radio, you can catch us on the live streams on Facebook, YouTube, Acres TV, and you can call the Red Wing Shoe Line, 701-293-9000, with your questions. Sarah and I have long lists of them, but no doubt you have some as well. So I'm going to ask one, and I know Sarah's got a question about the hay crop. Solve it for us, Travis. Grass-fed or corn-fed? I hear it all the time. What's the right one to go with? Does it matter?
it really depends on, I mean, there's so many different factors that go into your, you know, consumer preference on that. You know, corn-fed is going to be a little sweeter. It's going to have a little bit more robust fat flavor, I guess, versus, you know. The thing about good grass-fed, the problem with grass-fed, and this is going to sound a little bit, there's just a lot of grass-fed beef out there that isn't finished well. Finished in a mono, plant system where it's, you know, for good grass-fed beef, there's got to be a diversity of species out in the pasture. Let's put it that way. It can't just be alfalfa. It can't just be upland grasses. You need legumes. You need sedges. You need grasses, and that's because that's how the animal works. Otherwise, the fat in the beef gets to be, you know, pretty nondescript. Let's put it that way. And so then, what your flavor's coming from is just from the protein itself. And the protein itself doesn't have much flavor. That's why some people say, well, I had some grass-fed beef and it just tasted like deer. Well, that's because it's just protein. And beef, traditional, what we're used to getting flavor from beef, it comes from the fat in the beef. So you get these different flavor profiles based, of course, on what the animal's been eating. So traditionally in this country, we're very corn-fed, and that's a product of, you know, fairly cheap feed and the amount of food we have to produce to feed not just the U.S. but the world. We have to have a fairly efficient animal that can grow fast and convert, pounds of whether it's corn or grass or whatever into saleable product. And so the most efficient method is, of course, corn-fed. That being said, there are folks out there that prefer the grass-fed. They prefer the grass-fed for a number of reasons. It might be philosophical. It might be ideological. It might just be I like it better. It tastes better to me. So it really doesn't matter. The point is just eat beef. Beef is a superfood, and there's no way around it. It is the only true superfood with, you know, apologies to the quinoa folks and kale folks out there that want to claim theirs is. Beef's the only one that's got protein. It's got great fats. It's got all the vitamins and minerals that you need. I mean, it is truly the only food, and I'm going to run off the reservation here a little bit, and I'm going to get spanked by somebody out for saying this, where you can just eat beef and you'd be just fine. There's no other food. If you only ate pinto beans, eventually your body's going to go, all right, I need something else. Beef can pretty much cover what you need. As long as you get some sunshine, you get a little exercise, you can eat beef and almost nothing else, and your body will be, you know what, I'm happy, I'm satisfied, I'm getting everything I need. So we need to get that message out. And like I said, somebody's going to call me after this and say, you're not supposed to say that, but I really don't care anymore. I'm tired of the rhetoric. So beef's a superfood. Just eat beef. Life's good.
That's a good message right there. Just eat beef.
Just eat beef.
Everybody on the carnivore diet was like, yeah.
Right. So. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So. I do like my beef sometimes wrapped with bacon, but
well,
you know,
absolutely. Me too. Me too. So.
But I do have to ask, the agronomy side of me is curious about the hay crop this year. How much hay do you actually need for the winter?
Yeah.
And did you get enough? How are things looking?
So, you know, up in our part of the world, up in Benson County, and just for folks, we're about 100 miles straight north of Jamestown, or, you know, about 100 miles straight west of Grand Forks. Kind of do that math if you'd like, or think about our geography. We'd actually had really good moisture this year. You guys are talking about how dry it is out in the valley. You know, like a month ago, we got a 3-inch soaker.
Oh.
You know, right in the middle of harvest, which screwed stuff up.
I hear all the jealousy.
I know. And then, you know what? On Sunday, we got another 3/4 inch. We are just finishing corn today. In fact, I'm expecting a text message now to say corn harvest is finally done for us because it set us back. But to be honest, in August, I was thinking we weren't going to start corn harvest till Thanksgiving because we were so many growing degree days behind, but we got caught up. But you asked about the hay crop. Hay crop's fantastic. Go sit on any hill out there and look, and you'll see thousands of bales. So hay is going to be feed's pretty inexpensive right now between corn and hay, which is why we're seeing feeder calf prices. They're awfully good right now. But, yeah, we've got a really good hay crop. We have more hay in the yard than we need. My dad, Brian, he's 77 years old, and, you know, winter's always coming for him. Winter's always coming. Oh, winter's coming, guys. Oh, we're always behind. And he always his complaints like, we never get our hay hauled. We never get our hay hauled. I'm here to tell everybody in WDAY land, we had our hay hauled by the 1st of October this year. And my dad is still complaining about how we're not ready for winter. So I don't know if I'll ever make him happy. But
I actually have a story about your dad that I've heard that you finally got him off the ranch last year, excited to go to Texas for a change. And they finally got a break.
Yeah.
And they got down there because he wanted to get away from snow and doing chores. And it was like the first snow in Texas in decades.
Yeah, it was like 30 degrees and it snowed. So that's the way it goes.
And he probably had his coveralls in the car.
You know, it wasn't, he didn't have to do chores. But you know what, he and mom don't last down there very long. They go down in about 4 or 5 days. Grandma starts missing the grandkids and dad starts worrying about the cows and everything. And so I'm like, just stay for a couple of weeks. I don't know, we're going to come home. I'm like, you just got there. But anyway. So.
Well, you get off the ranch a little bit with your work with North Dakota Beef Commission.
Yeah, sure.
And it's, I honestly, I haven't had the opportunity to have somebody from the Beef Commission on the show since Nancy Jo Bateman retired.
Sure.
So for those who aren't familiar with it, what is that facet of North Dakota?
Yeah, so the North Dakota Beef Commission is, we're a unique entity in the beef checkoff world in that we are a state organization. And so our job is fiduciary. We collect the beef checkoff. And the beef checkoff is a mandatory collection of $1 per head of every animal sold. And those dollars go to the North Dakota Beef Commission. About half of that money has to pass up to a larger national organization called the Cattlemen's Beef Board. And the other half, then, the Beef Commission has purview over. And a portion of that money goes to overhead expenses, employees and things. So you have to have some management. And then what's left over, I guess, then the Beef Commission gets to decide on where those dollars flow. Some of it flows to the national organization. Some of it stays in state and, you know, funds local programs like our very, very popular Powered by Beef program that the Beef Commission has right now. And if you've been up in the tailgate lot at NDSU, you would see the Beef Commission's there with their Powered by Beef tent serving beef and talking about the, you know, why we should all eat more beef. They also did some tailgates at UND. They did tailgate at Mary, at Dickinson State. But that's some of the in-state programming, along with funding research and, you know, supporting NDSU. We're supporting the Peltier Complex with the new meats lab. And so that's where those dollars tend to go. Now, I talked about the national. There is also a state dollar. Several years ago, I think it was about 2015, the legislature instituted a second dollar because the dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. That dollar is refundable. If you ask, you can have that dollar back as a beef producer. But then those dollars, they go into the general pot and are used once again for local programming or national programming as needed. So that's kind of how the checkoff works. So the purview of the checkoff is to increase demand for beef and beef products. That's the mission of the checkoff as it's written. And so those are the things we try to do.
So coming up this weekend, we are going to have a very fun event on Saturday night. Bridget alluded to this earlier. The FFA banquet is coming up, and all three of us are going to be there. It's going to be a great evening, so looking forward to seeing you folks face-to-face. Yeah. I thought it would be a great time. FFA has influenced many young people to becoming leaders and developing their careers, whether it's in agriculture or in leadership roles. So what are, and this is actually going to be a question for both of you. Of course, Travis, you get to go first. Sure. No offense, Bridget.
That's okay.
What is your favorite FFA memory?
You know, that's a really loaded question because not only was I in FFA, but then I was also an ag ed advisor and FFA advisor, or an ag ed instructor and FFA advisor for several years. I think, you know, my favorite memory in 1997, we had won the state dairy judging contest, and we went to nationals. And I had a big trip all planned, and we were going to go through Minnesota and stop at all these dairies and do all these workouts. And we had a whole week planned leading up to the national convention because that's how I used to do it. and a big blizzard came across Nebraska and southern Minnesota and Iowa, and we got to Council Bluffs, and we were like, this whole thing is just smeared, right? We can't do it. So we found this Roadhouse Inn, and the guy gave me a rate for $40 a night, and we spent 3 days in this Roadhouse Inn, blizzarded in before the national convention, and we just looked at slides, and we gave reasons. And we're like, I looked at Josh Dorman was my assistant coach. He was helping me. And I said, well, we're screwed. And we went down and we had three top 15 individuals. We were fourth in the country, with the kids. I think that might be my favorite FFA story because I had all this stuff planned up and I just thought, oh, this is just going to be a disaster. We're going to be a bronze team. And we went down there and the kids just did fantastic.
They were focused.
We did get them focused, which is not that easy to have, you know, five kids in hotel rooms for 3 days to stay focused. That requires a carrot and a stick. So I think that's probably my favorite FFA memory.
So as Sarah mentioned, tomorrow night is the North Dakota FFA Foundation Blue and Gold Gala. And the gala is being held at the Holiday Inn. Festivities start with a happy hour at about 5 o'clock. We move into the banquet and so forth at 6:30. Our entertainment will be dueling pianos. For those who want to support, maybe whether if you can be there, come out and buy tickets. If you cannot, you can check actually my Facebook page and I'll resend it out through Weather and Ag and Focus today. You can bid on silent auction items.
Right.
And there's some great things there. Whether you're traveling out to Medora and you want a prize package for that, if you're planning a bigger trip to Europe, there's some things there. But there's also great NDSU memorabilia FFA items as well. And Sarah, you're right. It's kind of a loaded question. If I get to talk about FFA, I would probably say that the year that I was a senior and we won state parliamentary procedure and we got to go compete nationally. And that was prior to it being a condoned national contest. It was still an invitational in Carthage, Missouri. And so if you ever wanted to wonder why there was a school bus load of kids going down the highway and then we would practice on the drive. So they're popping up and down in and out of their seats like a whack-a-mole.
Right.
As we were trying to, prep to do that contest. That was our best trip.
Shout out to Killdeer. They got fourth in Parley Pro this year. And I tell you what, that is like the unicorn, that Parley Pro contest. North Dakota goes down and, generally Texas and those kids come up and they got that southern accent and they're just so darn good.
Yep.
Really proud of the shout out to the Killdeer FFA this year. They were top five. I think they were fourth in the nation in Parley Pro. Outstanding.
They were huge.
That's such a big story. And so just real briefly, so tomorrow night that's about the foundation. So the FFA has a foundation, and we've got a lot of great sponsors. And that's what tomorrow night's about, raising and where those dollars end up going. They go to help travel. They go to scholarships. They go to chapters. They go to students. And so that's what tomorrow night's all about. All those dollars flow back to the kids, to the FFA students and the FFA chapters to support all these good things that FFA is doing. So.
We had someone call and say, wait, how do I support that? Where do I find it? And if you went to the North Dakota FFA Foundation website, you would find the link to that auction.
You would.
And I'll make sure to send that out through Weather and Ag and Focus today as well.
And there is a silent auction. There's a smaller live auction tomorrow night as usual, but there is a silent auction that's online.
Yep.
And you can buy it. And if you end up winning anything, obviously, we'll get it shipped to you. We'll take care of that. So
Travis, as we wrap up, first of all, people can find you by looking at the Dakota Farmer magazine, and they can see the article that is all about your supply store.
Right.
But where else can folks find you if they want to continue to talk to you after today?
Go to MatticRanchSupply.com or MatticRanch.com if you're online, and everybody is. MatticRanch.com is about the ranch. It was our kind of initial attempt at branding, what we're trying to do. Talk a little bit about our holistic management, our regenerative practices and the things like that. And then Matic Ranch Supply, of course, is more of an e-commerce site. Now we're working on the shipping side. Apologies, we don't quite have that up and running yet, but it'll show you, the categories of products that we're carrying and the things that we're trying to do. And everything we always talk about, what's our philosophies and all this and why we're doing it, The supply store, those are products we tend to use on the ranch and we believe in. The ranch is about family and philosophy. So look us up. 6-1 Meats, that's the processing out at New Salem too. If you want to take a look there, it'd be awesome. So
yeah, and remember, beef is good for you no matter what.
No matter what. Eat more beef.
All right. We are going to come back. We've got to touch on the weather and the last few headlines, so stay tuned.
Hey, Bridget, sorry I couldn't be with you this afternoon. I'm not feeling the greatest. Hey, it's my putt. Hold on. Oh, wait. Never mind, Bridget. Anyway, we're going to have a beautiful, beautiful afternoon today with temperatures close to 50, plenty of sunshine out there. And then as we head into tomorrow, pick day of the week, it's going to be wonderful for this time of the year. Highs well above normal into the mid-50s with plenty of sunshine and winds out of the southeast about 5 to 15. So much-needed rain comes into the area as we head into Saturday afternoon and evening. Not looking like a lot, about a quarter inch or less with highs in the 50s. Then that sets the stage for a pretty decent Sunday, a little breezy, with highs in the mid to upper 50s. And then another storm system is possible as we head into Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Some much-needed moisture hopefully heads our way by then, followed by cooler weather as we head towards the end of next week.
Oh, good news that Dean was able to just drop his voice in for us. So we got the weather report as usual. And thanks to those of you who have been calling with questions. Again, that number is 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Line. My guest host today is Sarah Levis from Hillsboro. And okay, Sarah, you and I were talking beforehand about some little headline things. One of them was that the American Farmland Trust is collaborating with Real Farmer Care, and that is as a fiscal sponsor to support and advocate for farmer well-being. They're giving out $100 gift cards to help with massage, gym memberships, maybe buying some home workout equipment for folks to help relieve some of the tension and stress that happens when you're farming. And you and I talked about this just a little bit last year. You're also noticing a slightly different trend amongst a lot of our farmers and agronomists.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. You know, I think I've been in the industry for about 20 years. And Bridget, I know you've been in the industry longer than I have been. But at the beginning of my career, there were less women that were working. But also, one of the things that I noticed is that the hours were very long, and the family time tended to be dominated by women only doing that job, or primarily doing that job. But it feels to me like I'm seeing a very big shift to where there's a really big balance going on with that. One of the things I've noticed, and this happened just a little bit earlier, I work with, in my professional job with GK Technology, I work with agronomists and farmers from all over the place. And I actually was working with an agronomist earlier. She has a large, she farms, and she also has an agronomy business in Northwest North Dakota and kids. And it was so interesting. It was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were still trying to catch up and have a conversation about fertilizer. And we ended up meeting at night at 9 o'clock at night so we could actually get our stuff done.
Sometimes we got to make it work. And we're seeing folks that are remembering to make time for family whenever they can. Thanks for joining me today, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
That was super fun. Hope you guys get the 30-point buck out there.
I hope they all get them. Jay Thomas is next.